Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in company's profile. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, everyone. Welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey and Chad here, your host for this weekend's edition. Also your host throughout the week on our website, kereport.com, and podcast, The KE Report. Big shout out to Chad throughout this last week as I was away for spring break with my family. So Chad took all the heavy lifting when it came to more news and more volatility, especially around that Fed meeting and statement. Because we've talked so much, at least in the last few weeks, about the banking sector, the Fed, just what might happen in terms of short-term market moves, I really think it's valuable to take a step back and look at big picture what has been going on with the economy, with some of the markets. We are also, though, going to touch on the banking sector. We are kicking off the show with Peter Buchvar, Chief Investment Officer at Bleakley Financial Group, also editor of the Book Report website. That's where you can keep up to date with Peter in terms of market data, market moves, and anything else that's catching his eye, all geared towards the investor. Peter, I do want to get your thoughts on the at least initial failure of some smaller banks, except for that Silicon Valley Bank, as well as the Fed, the government, other governments also stepping into the banking sector to help shore up depositors, making them whole. When we take a step back from this, Peter, just how big of an issue are these cracks in the system for the banking system around the world?
Well, for U.S. banks, obviously mostly the regionals, you know, we're talking more about what the equity value is going to be for some of them. They need to raise capital, equity capital, and what the lending environment is going to be like. I don't expect really any more, or I should say many more, SVBs or signature banks where you have outright failure. Now, there is a question now that's very open-ended about whether deposits, uninsured deposits, will be insured and it'll be just a blanket government coverage, you know, putting aside the philosophical debate whether that's the right thing to do or not. We're sort of in this gray area. And until that is answered by Congress, I think there's obviously going to be a lot of questions being asked. But I think it's less going to be the viability of these most of these banks, and more so the hit to profitability via higher deposit rates, shrinking loan margins, thus less loan growth, and at the same time, as I said, equity raises to firm up one's balance sheet. So there is economic consequences to slow down in lending, and there's going to be an equity consequence for those that need to raise capital that way. Broadly speaking, say global, to elaborate, you know, with Europe, for example, who they had a big sell-off in bank equity as well, sort of in sympathy. But I think there's less of an acute issue in Europe. But at the same time, 80% of the lending to business, both big and small in Europe, is done via the banks. So if they continue to tighten, and I say continue because they already started it, and the same is in the case in the U.S., there's been a tightening of lending standards, which you can only imagine is going to accelerate. So Europe's economy is at risk just from a slowdown in lending, and U.S. economy will be negatively impacted as well. At the same time, we were already on the cusp of, you know, an economic downturn in response to the aggressive rate hikes.
Well, Peter, just in the along those lines, that we were already setting up for some kind of a pullback or slowdown or contraction in the economy because of these aggressive rate hikes, and even if they were to pause the Federal Reserve and even other central banks and leave these rates higher, we still don't know what the overall effects are going to be. But in lieu of some of these banks holding bonds that they bought when they were a lot lower interest rate environment, and these rate hikes have caused interest rates to have got, you know, the yield curve got inverted, the 10-year, the 2-year, everything shot up so high so quick that a lot of them were sitting on problem assets when people pulled their deposits out. And that's really where some of these banking issues came from. People are drawing an analogy to the 2008 Great Financial Crisis, but they seem a little different because that was about toxic debt and about, you know, mortgage-backed securities that really weren't worth anything. How would you compare this to the 2008-2009 Great Financial Crisis?
Well, I think that's right. That's where there's a huge difference, is that banks were loaded up on crappy assets, where right now the problem is more of risk-free assets of held to maturity, but duration marks that look ugly. You know, the irony is that the Fed probably has the most ugliest balance sheet, with about half the bonds that they own north of 10 years in maturity. But putting that aside, that is the challenge that these banks make. But, you know, the strange thing is that that's what banks do. They borrow short, they lend long. And they lend long in a variety of different ways, whether they're buying agency MBS, U.S. Treasuries, or they're lending money to a business. So there's always an asset liability mismatch that takes place at banks. The question is, of course, to what extent and what those assets are in. But, you know, in the banking regime that we have and the accounting standards we have and differentiating between hold to maturity and available for sale, and also just the confidence of one's depositors all come together in this sort of strange mix. We know that SVB was sort of unique in that it had a very concentrated deposit base and focused on really one industry, and that's what screwed them. I think broadly speaking, the rest of the banking sector has much more diversified deposits, so hopefully that there'll be a sense of calm that kicks in after the troubled ones figure it out one way or the other, and we can just go back to focusing on what the, you know, again, the profit standpoint, as I said, the impact is rather than the viability is of these.
So I want to circle around to something that you said, because it seems to be the consensus here is that lending is going to slow down, if not grind to a halt. How important is that to understand for investors in terms of where money will flow then? If lending is unavailable to these growth companies, do they have any hope?
Well, lending still might be available to some extent, but it just may be at, you know, a much higher cost. And when you think about, if you're in commercial real estate, a lot of these banks already have a lot of commercial real estate loans on their books. So they've been loath to further expand that business. They're just trying to figure out the legacy loans that they have. So at least that area, you're going to have to go to non-bank lenders in order to get loans in commercial real estate, but you're going to have to pay up for it. And there are going to be projects that that don't get off the ground because the numbers don't work anymore. Or you're going to have to pump up more equity. It's just the broad impact is going to be a slowing pace of activity. And those with strong balance sheets and liquidity are going to have a field day taking advantage of this.
So when we take this all into account, especially with the slowdown in lending, with the issues in the banking system, and with investors getting a little bit more defensive, is this all deflationary then in your eyes here, Peter? I know the Fed has wanted a disinflation environment, but does this all lead to deflation?
Well, maybe sooner, or I should say immediately, as the economy slows, but, you know, we continue to have these bailouts. The Fed continues to, you know, has turned on the sort of liquidity spigot here as their balance sheet in 1 week got back to the highest level since last November. So it could be, but I think with the inflation debate, it's where it settles out at after this rate hiking cycle plays through. And if the Fed eventually responds by, you know, cutting interest rates and we can see a reacceleration in any downward trend on inflation. I think structurally speaking, the level of inflation is going to be higher. But yeah, in the next 6 months, can we get further fall in prices because the economy is further weakening? Yeah. But to me, that would just be temporary disinflation rather than anything else.
Okay, we're out of time for this segment on the radio. Everyone, stick around. We're going to be right back with Peter Buchbach.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
No other network provides the level of customer service we do. When it comes to radio advertising, we are your one-stop shop. And no matter how big or small your business is, we can help. Email us at advertise@gcnlive.com and an experienced advertising executive will help you take the first step towards driving more customers to your business or website. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Chihibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. ShopSuperTea.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Airlines have just reduced their prices even more. Book 30 days in advance and save big.
Want the absolute lowest prices on your airline tickets? Then call the low-cost airlines travel hotline right now for prices so low we can't publish them anywhere. The only way to access our low rates and save up to 70% is to call. Save hundreds on your vacation tickets by calling right now. You can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go, and pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
802-341-4535. 802-341-4535. 802-341-4535. That's 802-341-4535.
You don't sit behind a desk every day to earn a living. You're out and about making it happen. And sometimes you get a little bit behind on your paperwork. You know, like bookkeeping and paying your taxes. It's easy to get behind on paying your taxes. It happens to the best of us. And you know what happens next. The big bad IRS comes knocking on your door. And when that happens, you need to call the good old boys at the Tax Doctor. Let them do what they do best. Deal and negotiate with the IRS so you pay the lowest you can in back taxes that the law allows. We are a 100% U.S.-based company, and we've saved our clients millions over the years in back taxes. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, call my friends right now at the Tax Doctor and learn more.
800-507-3137. 800-507-3137. 800-507-3137. That's 800-507-3137.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. We are continuing to chat with Peter Buchbach, Shad's up next with his question. So, Shad, take us away.
Peter, you brought up an interesting point there about the Fed's balance sheet, because they have been on the tightening warpath for some time now, and they were really big on quantitative tightening and starting to, you know, shore up some of their balance sheet. But over the last few weeks, as they've backstopped some of these banks and have a facility available that could even further fund these banks, they've wiped out a lot of that tightening that they've done all in one motion here. What kind of effect do you think that's going to have on the economy and on the marketplace?
Well, I don't think much on the economy and the markets. I think that money is being raised by banks in return for handing over their agency and treasuries. First of all, it's only a 1-year term, and I think these banks are just doing it to just satisfy any deposits that leave. This money is not going to be lent out to the businesses because it's going to have to be returned in a year. So I think this money is just sort of pull the lever if there's an emergency. That's what this is. So yeah, optically the balance sheet's expanding again, but again, this money's, at least as of now, is going to have to be returned during a year, and I think it's just insurance money and to fill holes, deposit holes that may come up.
Well, Peter, over the last couple of years, we've talked a lot with a lot of our guests about the rotation from sector to sector, and we've seen from 2020 to 2021 where growth was reigning supreme. A lot of that money in 2022 shifted over to the value sector, where you saw more of an investment in utilities, consumer staples, healthcare. The financials were part of that, although I'm not sure how stable those are now. But even some of the commodities got a bit in energy. Now we're kind of seeing a bifurcated market, where over the last couple of weeks, we've seen things kind of breaking some of those correlations. You know, we've seen some of the safe haven assets get more of a bid, a kind of a breakdown in energy. But even within the general equities, certain areas are doing well while others are not. How do you make sense of this, where we've kind of seen this overall rotation from one to the other into more of a choppy, kind of fragmented market now?
Well, in a way, it's been going on for a while. I mean, if you look back almost a year ago, the S&P 500, to use that as an example, has traded as high as 4,300 and down in around 3,600. Well, the 50% retracement of that is about 3,950. So that's what we've been doing for the last year, is just churning and churning and chopping and chopping and having this rotational type activity. Where last year the trade was to buy energy, sell tech. Recently it's sell energy and buy tech. So that's just a characteristic of markets for a while. I still think the overall trend for many of these groups or some of these groups will be lower, but sort of tight time frames, you know, you get these algorithmic rotations that tend to be violent at times.
So, Peter, you mentioned energy and last year how the trade was out of tech into energy, at least for the first half of the year. Let's talk commodities, but let's start with energy again. Do you see the health of, let's say, oil or natural gas still sticking around? Or are you thinking that maybe those will drop along with as everything else slows down?
Well, we've certainly seen a sharp pullback already as the optimism about a demand increase from China has been offset by worries about a recession in the U.S. and slowdown in Europe. So it's sort of this tug of war. I still think over the coming years, oil prices are going to go much higher, but I certainly have to respect the concerns about faltering in U.S. demand for sure. I still think that, you know, over the coming year, China's increase in demand will overwhelm that. But yeah, I understand the pullback, but I still think that the sector is pretty attractive, as are the stocks.
Well, let's also talk about the precious metals. Over the last couple of weeks, they have garnered a bid in light of some of the flight to safe haven, along with bonds and with the yen. So just curious what your take is on how the precious metals are setting up for the balance of this year.
Well, when you think about the two biggest points of bearishness over the past year is the Fed's so aggressive in raising interest rates, and the dollar's been strong. Well, the Fed is about done raising interest rates, and the dollar peaked last September and is now rolling over. And, of course, now you have Fed's balance sheet increasing and what that means for potentially the dollar, what rising U.S. debts and deficits mean as a headwind for the dollar. And I think this, and I've said this before, so I'm guilty of being wrong in terms of my timing, but this is the kind of environment that gold and silver could thrive.
What are your thoughts on these critical minerals? Because, boy, oh, boy, they're in the news a lot. Governments seem more supportive of them, even shoring up big pools of capital for them. We've even seen on our site generally more interest in these sort of, and they're not new metals, but they do have this new interest in them. Do you think that this is a sustainable trend, that these critical minerals are truly in a bull market and money will stay available for them?
Well, I think all we have to do is look at the government's goals for EV usage and other renewables and the closure of coal plants and so on and so on, and that it's an impossible dream to be realized unless we get our hands on a lot of these materials. So I see for sure a lot of money that's going to be invested in whether it's lithium or copper or cobalt or nickel and other things that are going to be needed to power this new sort of, you know, energy utopian world that many want us to accelerate to.
Well, based on those comments, Peter, are you seeing the commodities in general as still part of a larger uptrend, or do you think a lot of the move we saw in 2022 got overly exaggerated due to the Ukraine war? I mean, what's your outlook, I guess, more in the medium to longer term for the commodity sector, barring some short-term volatility?
I still think that the trend is up. I still think that there's major supply challenges for a bunch of these different metals, some more than others. Demand is going to be temporarily impacted by a slowdown in the economy for sure. But when looking at over 5 to 10 years, there still seems to be a big mismatch between the demand that is needed relative to the supply that can be found.
Okay. Peter, I guess final comments then. Big picture, what matters for the rest of this year? Is it economic data? Is it the banking sector? Is it what central banks do? How are you going to balance out everything for the remainder of this year, which is quite a long time?
Well, it's all of the above, because we're living in a higher cost of capital world that just got even higher in light of what's going on with the banks. And in a credit-dependent, interest rate-dependent economy, this just naturally is going to slow the demand for borrowing, will slow the supply from lenders, and you're going to see slower economic growth until this economy can build up greater savings, both at the household side and the business side, that can rely more on equity than debt.
Okay. Peter, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts here. Again, kind of taking a step back from all this day-to-day action that we get bogged down with. There are some big picture themes that have really come to light in the last year and a quarter, let's call it, that do need to get noted because it is, quite frankly, a very different market environment. Peter, thank you as always for your time. If you want to keep up to date on what Peter's following, what he's writing about, you need to check out the book report, which I will link to in the weekend show posting. Peter, thanks again for your time.
Thank you, guys.
To find out more about today's guest, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
A news update. President Biden says the U.S. will always have Canada's back.
The president discussed the long-standing partnership between the two nations in an address to the Canadian Parliament.
And I believe we have an incredible opportunity to work together so Canada and the United States can source and supply here in North America everything we need for reliable and resilient supply chain.
He said the two countries anchor the most competitive and prosperous region in the world and laid out how his environmental and economic initiatives will create union jobs on both sides of the border. I'm Dave Collins.
A Florida couple has been kidnapped in Haiti. They remain captive under ransom demands. Family members asking for help and pressuring U.S. officials to find them. The U.S. State Department spokesperson said they are aware of reports of two U.S. citizens missing in Haiti. Corey Myers, USA News.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
As Dr. Wallach says, we all have nutrient deficiencies in our diets and must supplement with 90 essential nutrients in proper balances. At no cost or obligation, get a personal certified holistic health coach to help you develop a supplement program based on Dr. Wallach's recommendations. Call Linda at 833-VITAL-90. That number to call is 833-848-2590. That's 833-VITAL-90.
Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, the mineral doctor. You've heard me talk about 90 for life for years. 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 2 fatty acids. You may not know this, that I've actually designed Arthrodex for animals. That's right. Your pets need 90 for life, too. Get this essential pet product by calling 877-279-9422. That's 877-279-9422. Again, 877-279-9422.
Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Now the second half of this weekend's edition. We are going to be shifting our focus a bit more for all those investors in the gold stocks as we are chatting with Tavi Costa, portfolio manager at Crescat Capital. Now, Tavi, I want to take more a big picture look to give everybody some insights on what Crescat is looking for in terms of investments, either red flags that would turn you away from them or the type of companies as well that you find that you really are specializing in more with a big picture outlook. Let's start with jurisdictions. A lot of people talk about tier one jurisdictions, but quite frankly, you can find companies in almost every country, it seems like. And sometimes countries get hot, sometimes they don't. Sometimes broad continents are largely avoided outside of just the simple tier one jurisdictions that everyone says, oh, you want to have a world-class deposit in a tier one jurisdiction. That's more or less obvious. What about filtering down to other jurisdictions? Which ones, Tavi, do you think have a good opportunity here? Which ones do you guys like that aren't just that mainstream tier one jurisdiction?
And I think it helps to have a macro framework to think about this question, and something that we've been obviously doing a lot at Crescat, which is when you have a view that we're entering a period of the next decade that is likely to be inflationary. By that, I mean just that inflation will run in average for the overall decade. higher than prior decades, and you have cost of capital being higher as well, it's harder not to favor commodities over other things. And we know how most capital allocators have been really under allocating their own capital into tangible assets as a whole. And our view is very strong that we're seeing this deglobalization trends intensifying and looking for places in the world that will sort of benefit from this rather than the other way around. Like China, for instance, may not benefit from this. Is very important. And when you think about emerging markets are, in my opinion, in a very different stance. You have the net importers like China and India, and then you have geopolitical mess countries like Russia or China as well. And so Brazil is a place that actually falls into a different category of those. It's almost like any other most parts of the South American continent, which is very interesting because I think those economies will actually serve the world in a very different way and create different partnerships that we've had over the past years that are mostly served by places like China in the past and Russia as well. And so we think that when you look at the valuation of most of assets in South America, particularly Brazil, and we also have a strong view about Bolivia and other places that are becoming better, such as Chile, perhaps. And there are some negative sides of South America as well. But we're starting to become more and more bullish in that whole area just because of those macro reasons. And looking for opportunities there is fascinating because, yes, it requires everything has a price, right? I mean, the risk you're taking needs to be reflected in the price of the asset that you are buying. Therefore, that is certainly the case in some of the assets we've been buying in those areas. Those are also places that have been extremely unexplored. And some of those economies are looking to open up in order to attract more capital from institutions like ourselves. And so we're very glad to be in this position to be deploying capital in some of those areas. Brazil is and Bolivia are certainly my favorite, knowing that there's still risk for a lot of things. The political environment in Brazil has changed over the last year or so with the changing political leadership as well. However, when you think about the overwhelming, the underlying thesis behind this is kind of sort of being masked by those issues. And that is mostly because, in my opinion, the economy itself, which is very natural resource rich, is not only extremely correlated to the commodity market, but also when you think about a commodity person or a fund looking to find exposure to commodities is a very relatively small place. And so it's hard to spread your wing and diversify into different parts of the world. And so it's just hard to believe the South American economies won't serve as an alternative. And some places like Brazil might play even a bigger role than others. And some others like Bolivia have that carry a larger risk, but also have, great opportunities when it comes to quality of assets as well. So, you know, as I said earlier, everything needs to have its appropriate price as well relative to the risk you're carrying in those areas. But I do believe that I think market is perceiving this as a much higher risk than what actually is. And considering the last 10 years as a factor, which I don't think will be the same. I think those markets are actually likely to outperform developed economies and do much better over the next decade or so.
Well, Tavi, I think this is a really interesting topic for investors to consider jurisdiction, because when you think about what Corey mentioned, the tier one jurisdictions, let's say Nevada or Idaho in the United States or Quebec or British Columbia in Canada, a lot of people pile into those, but often those companies trade at a big premium to other companies as a result of people feeling like they're safer. But when you look at South American countries, the risk some people see is the political side and how that may affect taxation. So when you look at things like the direction Chile or Peru has gone, or Ecuador has kind of been a revolving door of good cycles and bad cycles, there's countries that were considered previously fantastic, like Peru or Chile, that have been under more pressure with investors. And then other countries like Argentina or Bolivia that you mentioned that were in the hurt locker, and they've actually improved But they often trade at a dramatic discount, especially companies that have developed some resources or, you know, have some exciting drilling that's proven there's proof in the pudding. Those companies usually trade at a big discount, similar to how West African countries traded a big discount to, let's say, North American companies. Is that where you see an arbitrage of value where it's unrealized how valuable these projects are because they're trading at a discount? Or how do you discount tougher jurisdictions when you're taking an investment stake in them?
We're very conservative when it comes to that. I mean, as you guys know, we'd like to build models and to be as unbiased as we can in our decisions. And so we put into consideration what's the size of the asset that we're dealing with, grades that are likely to be delivered. Obviously, those are huge variables that can change over time and be improved as our accuracy and our more information comes along. But in terms of political risk, I think there's a long-term and a short-term cycle for things. The long-term cycle is very bullish for South America, meaning all the things I said that favor commodities and also favor a place that is very neutral geopolitically speaking, meaning very few economies even entered World War II, you know, in terms of being involved with those. Brazil is a great example. It's almost like the Switzerland of South America when it comes to doing businesses with China, doing businesses with Russia, and doing businesses with Europe and other places in Europe and also in other places in like the U.S. or Canada or Australia. It doesn't really care of who you are. It just wants to make money. And so that's sort of the long-term cycle that I think it's turning. It hasn't fully turned yet, but it's turning. And it will be turning as you see this sort of commodity market becoming stronger and stronger over time and requiring more and more capital over time as well, will slowly transition into making South America a great opportunity.
Well, this is a debate that's going to undoubtedly go on forever in this sector because, look, there are some jurisdictions that just naturally the companies operating in there get a discount, but resources don't care where they are located. It's more how the investors are viewing the risk profile of a lot of these different areas. I personally really like South America, but I also completely understand some of the political risks that companies have to face. Everyone, stick around. We're going to be right back with Tavi Costa to wrap up the show, talking a bit more about potentially moving assets into the more of the production stage.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at TeamG'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.
Radio? Why should I advertise on radio? There's nothing to look at, no pictures.
Listen, you can do things on radio you couldn't possibly do on TV.
That'll be the day.
All right, watch this. Okay, people, and now when I give you the cue, I want the 700-foot mountain of whipped cream to roll into Lake Michigan, which has been drained and filled with hot chocolate. Then the Royal Canadian Air Force will fly overhead towing a 10-ton maraschino cherry, which will be dropped into the whipped cream for the cheering of 25,000 extras. All right, cue them up.
Now, you want to try that on television?
Well...
You see, radio is a very special medium because it stretches the imagination.
Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, the mineral doctor. You've heard me talk about 90 for life for years. 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 2 fatty acids. You may not know this, that I've actually designed Arthrodex for animals. That's right. Your pets need 90 for life, too. Get this essential pet product by calling 877-279-9422. That's 877-279-9422. Again, 877-279-9422.
Bad theater seats, cheap Halloween masks, my apartment, all things with obstructed views. Add to these large trucks and buses. 18-wheelers and large buses have big blind spots and, like my apartment, they don't always have the best view. Bus and truck drivers deal with blind spots around the entire vehicle. Always take care not to ride alongside or too close behind them. Our roads, our responsibility. Learn more at sharetheroadsafely.gov.
I need a tax preparer. How should I choose one?
Using a paid tax preparer this year? Before paying someone to do your taxes, make sure they're qualified. Ask about their fees, experience, and training. Check with a Better Business Bureau. Avoid anyone who promises a higher refund. And review your tax return before you sign it. And make sure your preparer signs it too. For more tips, visit IRS.gov and search Choosing a Preparer.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy, formerly Air Force Lieutenant Colonel, Air National Guard and Reservist. I'm looking for veterans, active duty military personnel to join the 90 for Life crusade to save America. She needs your skills, courage, and loyalty more than ever. Contact GCNteam.com. Because of the financial and healthcare collapse, veterans are currently struggling finding jobs. Frustrated looking for a job? Change your tactics. Join the 90 for Life crusade to save America. Start a healthcare business with FDI Longevity 90 for Life crusade. Contact GCNteam.com. Immediately. We're looking for military specialists who can use a computer and communicate information and execute a battle plan. Join the admirals, Navy SEALs, Marines, pilots, Army officers, military police, sheriffs, police officers, firemen, and first responders already enrolled in the 90 for Life Crusade. Contact GCNteam.com now. FDI Longevity will help you apply your military skills to the task of saving America through health and financial programs. Contact GCNteam.com. Enlist in GCNteam.com and save America.
Welcome back. Here to wrap up the weekend edition of the KE Report, we are still chatting with Tavi Costa, portfolio manager over at Crestcap Capital. Now, Tavi, tacking on to this whole jurisdiction discussion, when you are looking at these other jurisdictions, again, outside of Tier 1 jurisdictions, how important is it to, one, that there are larger companies working and successfully operating in those areas? Because that ties into that whole concept of nobody actually wants to build an asset. They just want to sell it. They want to drill and sell it and get out. How important are both of those factors when you're looking at companies? One, being operating companies in the jurisdiction, and two, that whole strategy of simply selling an asset, not developing it.
Well, it's such a big question because the notion I have, at least, is that everyone in this market, particularly in exploration, is a seller, and I'm referring to the CEOs of those companies. And maybe this is a function of the bear market and the depressed market we've had over the years and all the issues we've had with this industry that is causing most of those CEOs to be happy with potentially selling their assets for 2 to 3x of what they pay for, knowing that, you know, or ignoring the fact, perhaps, that the potential for those assets, if they are developed and taken into production one day, which I know it's a long-term plan, would likely unleash a much larger value for the investors. And so I think this is creating a setup for someone to be very creative, someone who has access for capital that is able to enter the space and able to acquire most of those high quality exploration names and take them into production. I'm not saying Crescent has necessarily the goal of being that, but we're certainly open for the idea, which I think it's almost being presented to us at this point, given the fact that what I thought it would happen a while ago, which is the supply cliff issue that most of the major companies are facing, that the M&A activity would be heating up much quicker. But we haven't seen much of that. Yes, I should point out that our core investments that we have at Crescent, meaning the companies that have recently defined that they do have a significant amount of resources and are on track to become major discoveries over time, are certainly now in engagement with the major companies, which to me, this is a new theme. We haven't really seen this in early 2022, for instance. I would say in the last 4 to 5 months, things have really heated up in that front. We even had an example of a company recently with it, which is Snowline Gold, that got an investment from B2Go. And so, but this is happening across most of the, or, you know, I would say our key investments. It's interesting as well, but I'm not sure that opportunity even is larger to be selling those assets to the majors at the prices that we're seeing. It's probably a much better opportunity for someone that has access to cash flow to be, you know, really bulking up those assets and making a large major company again. That's how major companies get developed over time. But we haven't seen anybody with that type of vision being able to create those. And yes, this is at the same time bullish for metals itself, because we know that if that's not happening anytime soon, supply will also remain constrained for the longer period of time. But at the same time, it's creating an incredible opportunity. Like I said, I'm not saying Crescent will be doing that. We are starting to create vehicles that will create cash flow to allow us to make those moves. But yeah, I think this opportunity literally is being presented to us, and it's just hard to ignore. And if it's not us, I think someone is going to be doing that at some point.
Well, Tavi, you bring up a great point there. And yeah, Ross Beaty built up his wealth by rolling things up into Pan American Silver when nobody wanted to develop these assets and put a lot of projects into one company. Keith Neumeyer did that with First Majestic. You could argue that Ross Beaty's doing it again with Equinox Gold by rolling up a lot of other projects that were stalled into one larger company with that cash flow to really acquire good quality assets and put them into production. But don't you think that if you look at the sector, a lot of the reason that most of these exploration companies don't want to hold for the long term, 5 to 10 years, and put it in production is they don't have those skill sets. They are geologists and explorers. They don't really have experience even in the development side and in the construction side, much less bringing a mine in production. And we have watched a series of belly flops into the swimming pool for the last few years from companies that thought they could take a small mine or a medium-sized mine and put it in production. And over again, those companies failed, never got off the mat. So there's a lot of companies watching that cycle play out and say, hey, I don't want to try to take with the team I have, or even if I bring on a new team, this project into production, I'd rather just sell it to somebody else. Isn't that why so many companies have that as their exit strategy?
Absolutely. I mean, by no means I'm saying this is an easy path. There's a reason there's one Ross Beaty out there and not 50 of those guys swimming around. And so it's not the easy path at all. I mean, the easy path is to identify perhaps you're at the early stages of a bull market for metals and mining industries and acquire a high quality exploration asset. That's the majority of the strategies across most of those CEOs. By doing that, you know, trying to get a foundation of good capital to really fund those stories at their early stages, develop those stories over time, get a hot market, sell that to the majors in an M&A cycle. Well, that's, you know, in a way, that's not also a easy strategy either to accomplish. However, I think it requires what's happening currently, which what you pointed out is just not just a capital trend of lack of investments in the commodity space, really is a labor trend, right? It's the fact that we had if you look at the enrollments for geosciences in most universities today, it's also at a secular downward trend as well, which means the interest for folks to become geologists in geosciences is just not there. And so who is going to create the next new projects and so forth? But there are some very high quality folks that you can create companies with that have the capability and ability as well to create those over time. And so I'm a believer that you certainly can create those new major companies. It's just the vision is just so far away from everyone just because we haven't seen any of that happen in the last decades. And so the risk seems far higher than what the premium should be in order to do that. And so, but all you need is a change in that tune where you start seeing one or two names and folks becoming successful in creating those new opportunities that certainly will attract more folks doing the same. I mean, with taking an approach that is in a way similar to the venture capital approach, as I said before in other interviews, which has been to deploy large amounts of, at least for us, of capital in a very diversified way, and, you know, getting 10 to 20% stake in high quality companies with, you know, what we think are worth multiples of what they are worth currently. And then, you know, either wait for the majors to take them out or selves can maybe, find a way to put them into production or roll them up, as you said, like Russ Beattie did. But, you know, I think there's many ways to skin the cat. And I think, not necessarily I'm saying that Crescat will follow that path, but it's, you know, Newmont started that way early in the days. That's, you know, it was an investment fund that used to take stakes and interest in different great, projects across the world. They had major discoveries and over time they became what they became. And so I think that there's a one potential path for us, in addition to what we do in the macro side. And we're certainly, looking at those opportunities and seeing if they fit of our strategy. But I think it's all becoming more and more suitable to what the macro environment really is. And it amazes me of, you know, if you look at my conviction, at least, I mean, I don't care about other people's convictions, but my conviction, at least on the macro reasons for you to be investing in the space have never been higher. I mean, my learning curve over the last 1 to 2 to 3 years has been, you know, exponentially higher. And I still think I need to learn a lot more about this industry like everybody else, but I still think that this is an incredible opportunity that everyone is ignoring. And, you know, if there is room for someone to be creative here, I think that would be ideal for us to do that.
Hey, Tavi, it'd be great to see some more profitable mines built, some more companies that actually grow into some of the majors or significant mid-tiers that carry some weight, because that could actually free up some more funding for the sector. Everybody, thanks for tuning in. This wraps up this weekend show, and we'll be back with you next week. Tavi, everyone else, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for taking your time with us this weekend. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.
No matter where you live, what you make, or who you voted for, there's some things that will impact all of us soon. Whether you're concerned about extreme weather, the alarming increase in man-made disasters, or worsening food shortages, Americans are preparing in numbers not seen since World War II. What's changed is how we prepare. And the folks at My Patriot Supply have made it easier than ever for you to have peace of mind, knowing you're ready for what's next. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and stock up on their popular 3-month emergency food kit. They include tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners with over 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one kit per person. For a limited time, save $200 plus get free shipping on your 3-month supply at MyPatriotSupply.com. Too many Americans are being let down by institutions we used to trust. It's time to rely on ourselves. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com now. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
Honorary Forest Ranger Betty White here, lending a hand to my dear friend Smokey Bear, because for 75 years, he's only said,
"Only you can prevent wildfires."
But there's a lot more to say. Like, if you park your car on tall, dry grass, the hot exhaust pipe can start a wildfire. So be careful out there. Go to SmokeyBear.com to learn more about wildfire prevention. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.